Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Beyond the Hive, where we are just reeling from the news that broke today of Gordon Hayward's inevitable arrival in Charlotte and how it was going to happen. Welcome back. We're glad you're back. If you haven't already, give the show a subscribe. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Beyond Hive. You can email the show with any questions, comments, cares, or concerns, beyondthehivepod@gmail.com. You can follow the show members on Twitter as well. We've got Joseph Nation with us. He's at JNA1. Joseph, how you doing?
I am good. Probably would be better if there were, you know, a better Simon trade here, but here we are.
Good deal. And we also have James Boo. He's at JamesBoo9. James, how's it going?
Not the best, but probably better than Pete, who's, again, you know, just taking a sabbatical. Because I think he's finally realized his optimism, relative optimism for the Hornets has been, unfounded, and he's just struggling with life. Even though, lockdown has...
It's one of those things where it's just like the level of existential crisis that basketball has caused between him. And like I'm having a fair bit of one, too, to the point where like I've gotten very little schoolwork done over the course of the last week. Not because of, you know, actual obligations otherwise. It's just that, like, you know, the Hornets almost make you feel like, what's the point?
Yeah. Well said.
And yeah.
There'll be plenty of that sort of concept explored today, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Sad that this news and the draft broke the most optimistic of us. Like, it's just how rough it's been.
Yeah, I mean, to reiterate the stuff we see in the draft, like the draft in a vacuum was like quite solid. It's just, you know, just wasn't the best. This is another level. This is just like, there's not really much you can say about it. So this definitely broke me.
I feel you. I'm gonna try and stay positive. I have other reasons to be down in the dumps today. I watched the Kentucky Wildcats absolutely fall apart against the Richmond Spiders.
I thought something actually happened.
But at least it's not Evansville this year.
At least it's not Evansville, exactly.
And like Richmond is actually a credibly good team. It's just, you know, Kentucky should still be beating them. Let's be realistic here.
The way they went down, though, a Division II team probably would have won today. It was rough. Anyways, my proclamation that Kentucky was going to produce 5 first rounders this year may have been a little early.
Okay. Wait, who were they? So,
Boston Clark. Clark, Olivier Saar.
Oh, got a point guard as well.
Phelps'
right?
defense. Yeah, Devin Askew.
Okay.
We'll see.
So who's
Isaiah Jackson?
The fifth one was definitely a stretch. In other words, although, like, actually, no, because the fifth one would have been Jackson, right?
Yeah, Isaiah Jackson.
And I could see Jackson. Like, I think Jackson's more likely than Saar. I've never really understood why people like Saar, to be honest. I mean, I guess 7 foot and not totally uncoordinated is something, but either way.
So the problem really for me was that game happened, and then maybe not even an hour later, the news came out about what we were doing, what the Hornets were doing, and it was just, I don't know, it put me in a mood. So here we are with the Charlotte Hornets looking at a somewhat remade roster, not really, just 2 changes, and you know, after a year of infighting in division with Terry Rozier and Malik Monk and all the fights that went down on the sub, we have somehow made ourselves into an even more divisive team by A, drafting LaMelo Ball, which, you know, as we said, could have been a lot worse. And now acquiring Gordon Hayward, but more particularly the manner in which we've acquired Gordon Hayward. So if you haven't paid attention, or if you're just now hearing it, Gordon Hayward officially coming to the Hornets via signed trade. He is going to be paid around 30 million a year, starting at 28.5 million. And coming with him from Boston are a pair of second rounders. I haven't actually seen what those second rounders are. Are they Boston second rounders?
They are Boston's 2023 and 2024. Okay. So likely speaking, they are the 51st and 50, or like they're in the 50 to 55 range.
You know, it's something. It's not signing him for nothing. It's not giving them the trade exception for nothing, but it's there were other, I guess, more lofty aspirations, especially from some, you know, passionate fans on Twitter, on Reddit, on the Discord, people who wanted to see some moving and shaking, and mostly
not Terry Rozier.
Right, exactly.
mostly we just don't want to see Terry Rozier play basketball.
Yeah, I think that's like, that's been my whole mantra this offseason. We can do whatever we want in free agency. Well, I mean, ideally not sign Harrell, but apart from that, and then we could, as long as you just get rid of Rozier, it's a positive offseason for me. And yeah, obviously hasn't quite eventuated that way, so.
Well, we should mention, to make the trade legal, we sent back a highly protected second rounder of our own.
Which there's very little risk of conferring, because it's almost certainly protected for top 55, which would require us to be one of the best five teams in the league.
What year is it?
Practically speaking, if it does confer, I'm not going to worry about it.
What year is it?
Let's see. 2022.
Okay, yeah, that's too soon. Yeah, because...
Yeah, well, okay, let's be honest here. I'm not sure 2026 wouldn't have been too soon.
No, there's a vision, you know. I mean, you've been,
I mean, I guess there is a vision, but, you know, whether or not that vision has any real chance.
There's not a Kupchak-led vision, but there's a James Brew-led vision of, you know, just a pretty good team in 2026. But it looks like the Hornets have a bit of a they disagree with me a bit there, so there's a bit of divergence from that plan. Not that they were ever on track there anyway. So anyway, so
initial thoughts. When the news came across your phone, or you know, whatever you were looking at, what did you think at the moment when it said we are waving forward Nick Batum? Didn't say we're stretching him, but obviously we have to stretch him. And this was the package that was announced.
So we're kind of talking about this like it all elapsed today on the day that we're recording, which is November 29th. But practically speaking, this has been about a week-long process of, okay, we're signing Hayward. Okay, we're stretching Batum to sign Hayward to this large deal. Okay, Boston doesn't want to lose Hayward for nothing and realizes that we're willing to do something as stupid as stretching Batum. So Boston is going to try and work out a sign-and-trade. And then finally, the sign-and-trade, you know, actually elapses today. My reactions kind of in order step by step to that were, okay, well, one, Hayward is good, but he's not nearly worth that contract, and a 50% overpay is not a good idea. Namely, like, well, let's actually start with before free agency. Because before free agency, I actually explicitly said multiple times that doing literally nothing would be a 60th percentile outcome. What we did was worse than doing nothing by a wide margin. And it's, you know, it's worse than doing nothing from the Hayward contract immediately, because the Hayward contract, while Hayward will be a good player for us, and like, I suspect that Gordon Hayward will probably be, you know, somewhere around the 30th to 35th best player in the NBA over the next 1 to 2 years. The back end of the contract will obviously be terrible. It's always going to be terrible, but Mitch is probably going to retire before then, so he doesn't have to take the consequences for
it. Oh, gee, I hope so. Far out. Get out of here, man. No, I mean, it's not going to get better with that guy, the owner in charge.
With Buzz? With Buzz Peterson, is that what you're saying?
No, I wasn't talking about you. Buzz Peterson, was he behind the Rozier and Hayward stuff?
No, Kupchak, as far as I'm aware, was, well, oh, you're, yeah, you're, you know,
he's talking about,
you're saying, no.
Got it.
He's talking about the very, very top, not the guy who's going to replace Kupchak. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Basically,
contract was bad. It's about a 50% overpay in the sense that, like, $20 million a year would be fair value for Hayward. Waving Batum is even dumber because there were way better ways to create cap space. Just, you know, have any team take Rozier for a slightly worse player. Like, Rozier for Corey Joseph
does
and stretch Corey Joseph puts $5 million less on the books. Or just buy, like, actually, no, let's rephrase that. Even without stretching Corey Joseph, you can get away with only basically with just convincing Batum to take a buyout for $5 million less than his actual salary that he would recoup from the Clippers immediately. So basically speaking, you can get enough space out of just Rozier for Corey Joseph on its own. Which means that practically speaking, stretching Batum to create the cap space was the dumbest way we could have done it. And then, well, practically speaking, the sign-and-trade is complicated because the sign-and-trade that we took was the worst possible sign-and-trade. You know, practically speaking, there were, you know, doing something like Zeller for Rob Williams clears the appropriate space, makes a lot more sense for both parties, and is better than what we got. You know, doing something like, Rozier for nothing. The traded player exception is smaller, but then the Celtics actually have a backup point guard, as opposed to, you know, throwing Peyton Pritchard out there as a rookie who will almost certainly be terrible.
I'm not sure Rozier's going to be worse than that, but...
Rozier playing next to Smart kind of works.
Okay.
Just because Smart can do a lot more of the, like, passing stuff.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, I really like, the day the sign trade stuff was kind of announced, I really did buy into Ainge wanting to reunite with his boy Rozier, because, yeah, Rozier, next to Smart, exactly, that's the combo. Like, he actually used to try on defense when playing next to Smart. Smart would motivate him and stuff. And Rozier, you know, you can kind of tell with his tools, there's no reason why he can't be a pretty good on-ball defender. And, keep going, Joe.
Right. So, basically speaking, at every single step of this process, we have managed to almost take the worst possible option. There may be a few places. Like, I mean, obviously, there were worse. We could have done something, like, completely dumb, like trade for DeMar DeRozan, which would have actually been worse. But, like, by and large, the options that we have taken have all been bad ones at every step of the process. And so, like, you know, my first impression of this and my last impression of this is that, well, practically speaking, it's not good.
Yeah, get C orders. And start hoarding C orders.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, so about halfway through the, to explain this briefly, about after the initial move was announced and the Batum waiver was kind of
floated. That tweet went crazy, man. I'm sure every listener would have seen it.
Basically, I tweeted out a thread detailing.
Have you pinned it yet?
Here's why the front office should be replaced by sea otters, by a family of sea otters. Practically speaking, I stand by it. Sea otters would have done a better job of this offseason. It's that straightforward.
It's an extremely good thread. I think we talked about last podcast potentially, maybe, but yeah,
a little bit.
It's
just.
Did Beyond the Hive retweet it? I think they might have, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So if you want to see it, go look at our Twitter. Yeah. It's at Beyond Hive. You know. Remember that and all. But yeah. So James, about where are you in terms of your impressions? Because we've kind of gone through mine, but not so much anyone else.
You covered a fair bit of it. I've always really admired Hayward's game. Like, he's one of my absolute just favorite players just in basketball. Like, I love the way he plays. I love, like, the fact that he's got such a well-rounded skill set, but I love the fact that he's actually, like, he's got the playing skills and the, I guess, even reputation of a star, but he can easily, you know, take a step back. Just keep the ball moving, that sort of thing. Like, I think that's such a rare... I think he has just an absolute rare, like, just completely rare skill set that only guys like like Kyle Lowry and Steph Curry and LeBron James kind of have. I really think of him very highly, and because he was on the Celtics, I never really went public with that admiration. But I genuinely love his game, and even after losing athleticism, and the fact that he's still pretty good after losing basically it seems all of his burst is pretty crazy. Because the thing I wanted to touch on that Joe maybe hasn't touched on is the backup options for the Hayward thing. Because we also, it's confirmed we offered Montrezl Harrell a 4-year deal for more than the MLE. And then it's confirmed we also offered a 4-year deal, I think, or just a lucrative deal to Derek Jones Jr. So if we missed on Hayward, like, does that mean we potentially stretched Batum to sign those two? And if even if we didn't stretch Batum to sign those two, I probably not. I don't even know, because we had cap space, so we wouldn't have had the $9 million MLE.
We had enough cap space to sign either of their individual deals. Yeah. And I suspect that just given the number of roster spots, wouldn't have signed both.
But yeah,
practically speaking, if we had not signed Hayward, I think we probably would have actually been a little bit better off. Just because those contracts are smaller and more manageable. Hayward is clearly a much better player than either of those two.
Yeah, I would say, the fact that it's just like a waiver stretch means, Hayward's kind of getting paid 147, not 120, but I don't know, because I'd rather have just played no one or Cody Martin than Derek Jones Jr., honestly, just because.
Yeah, I agree. Doing nothing was a 60th percentile outcome.
So it's just a whole process. Like, what are we doing? Derek Jones Jr., I guess you can kind of say, he's young. He's got a bit of upside, even though on merit, he probably, not on merit, but if we were doing the right thing, he maybe might be the fifth forward. Fifth place forward in the rotation.
Right, yeah.
And then
The first third string forward.
Yeah, exactly. And then Harrell, I don't even know what to say. There's absolutely nothing. Just what a terrible, job by the scouting department to identify him as someone to pay real money. It's just, we may as well have drafted Obi Toppin. That's it. So I've said this before, but my only solace right now from this offseason is we didn't draft Toppin or Okongwu. And I'm not exactly sure where we're going. All the discourse from the front office, Bobowski is very happy because he's just unbridled skepticism.
Everyone has realized that he was correct the whole time.
Good on you. It was all, next year's going to be a tanking year. This year we might use cap space to absorb bad contracts with picks. We're going to take it slow. We're going to have at least one more year, that sort of thing.
And I love how, by the way, the team that has done the most absorbing contracts for picks is the Oklahoma City Thunder, who had zero cap space at all. Which should probably tell you that, somebody in the front office is not doing their job.
Yeah.
Namely, Mitch Kupchak.
Yeah, exactly. He's been saying we're going to be opportunistic and that sort of thing. And then,
and then teams without opportunity are managing to take away those opportunities from us. Yeah. That particular branch of management was just not well handled at all. The fact that the Thunder were consistently, if the Thunder had found one or two absorption deals like that, that would be whatever. Practically speaking, they have some assets they can include and it makes sense. The Thunder consistently found deal after, I think they had, what was it, four separate trades of that nature, where they took on dead salary for new, for replacement players.
Adams.
Which, That's completely ridiculous that we couldn't do that. Let's see. So they had TJ Leaf, George Hill, the Schroeder deal, the CP3 deal.
Hayward. Horford, and then Adams.
But yeah, the Horford deal, so that's five.
Well, Adams was in
that
the
may be thing. It.
Yeah, so five.
Oh wait, how did they get Schofield?
I don't even know. Is Schofield on the OKC? Wow. Okay.
Oh, he was traded with Krejci. That's interesting. I didn't realize that was what that trade was.
Damn, I don't like Wizards losing Schofield. So, although I think, yeah, okay.
I don't think Schofield is great. Or good, even. Or actually, he's just bad. Like, it's not even, you know, either way. But it looks like, yeah, they basically took Schofield as a cap dump.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I mean, he's probably not
like
playing.
That's six separate moves where they absorbed someone for an asset, and the Hornets didn't manage to make one, despite having, like, there was a point where the Hornets were one of two teams with cap space, and they didn't manage to make a single move absorbing dead salary for anything. Like, you had one job in the offseason, and you managed to not do it even once. That's just so, like, you know, it's just bad planning. That's all it is.
If we want to continue the first impressions thing, it was just body blow after body blow, saying, you know, would go for to the Rockets and then Poeltl to the back to the Spurs, despite, you know, them still having LaMarcus. And then, I guess I'm happy we didn't sign Bogdan Bogdanovic to a 4-year deal, because he's probably the most overrated player in the league, judging from the stuff that's been going around on NBA Twitter. But
Yeah. Although I'm trying to figure out if having him at $18 million a year is actually worse than having Hayward at, at the functional, what was that? 148 is $29 million. $39 million a year. No, that can't 30, be right.
Like 7-ish.
$37 million a year.
Do it like that, I mean,
so like, Hayward, the thing is, even that, like, even a bad deal for Bogdan was better than what we actually did.
The thing is, like, that's the thing. Hayward is like, actually a good player, again, and Bogdanovic, I'm not actually sure. No, like, Bogdanovic, honestly, like,
yeah, I think Bogdanovic is a low end starter, realistically.
Well, the thing is, I don't think you can ever start him, like, for real. Like, you never go. He's one of those guys where. No, you're right, though. Like, yeah, exactly. When you, like, you know, stratify all the players, he's probably, yeah, like, that low-end starter. He's definitely top 150. But,
yeah. And that means that, like, probably $13 to $14 million is a fair deal for him.
Yeah.
Right? And at that point, being overpaid by $4 million instead of being overpaid by $10 million, well, you'll take that.
Fair enough.
So.
All right, do we move on?
Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out sort of his Hayward's contract structure.
I think Bobby Marks confirmed that it might be like 29 point something second year. Like, it's just a flat out increasing one. Yeah,
We haven't actually confirmed exactly what it is. Starting it at 28.5, the reason why 28.5 makes sense as a number is that 28.5 times 1.05, so a 5% raise, is 30, approximately. If that's the structure Marx is doing, that's one of the options I had said. So basically, 28.5 times 1.05 is approximately 30. It's actually, in this case, technically a little bit, it's like 29.92, which is why we did 29.9. Then we go to 30.1 to keep it level, and then 31.5. The reason for this is that one of the agreements, in order to account for the revenue shortfall, was that for the next 3 years, the escrow amount is going to be increased. So you want to ideally backload the contract as much as you possibly can if you're a player. Just because, practically speaking, that's a smaller percentage of the total money that comes out due to escrow. So when you do it that way, it's 28.5, 30, 30, 31.5 functionally. Practically speaking, it varies by 0.1 in either direction because it's 28.5 flat. And then if you do that, then you can't get all the way to 30. It's 29.92. But it's approximately that for that reason. It's not the ideal structure that we should have negotiated. We should have at minimum negotiated 28.5, 30, 31.5, 30. So that last year, which is going to be brutal because Hayward will have aged, and realistically speaking, he's going to not even get close to the actual value. you know, so that that last year would have been more palatable. But it's at least a reasonable structure, which makes it to where it's not the full 5% increase every year, which would be 32.4 in the final year, which, you know, is obviously too much. So we saved ourselves $1 million in the final year of the contract, which is going to be the worst one, and mitigated the worst potential impact of it overall. But either way, though, like, you know, the problem here is not the structure of the contract. The problem here is the, you know, amount of the contract.
Right.
The structure is not the ideal structure for the team, but practically speaking, I'm not sure that Hayward would have agreed to the... Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't know what Hayward had otherwise on the table, and why he wouldn't... And if he actually wouldn't agree to the amount with the with more money in the escrow... In the increased escrow years. I just don't know where that would have fallen. Now, I do tend to think that, like, a full, flat-out descending contract actually loses him enough money to where a ascending contract at a lower amount would actually be worth it at that point. Just because, like, if it's a descending contract at 120 is approximately equal to an ascending contract at, let's see, so we would take, I think it's like 117, just doing some quick mental math. So it's not that much of a drop, but it is still some drop due to the amount of escrow. Just based on how the money is actually distributed over the life of the contract, which, you know, I doubt that anyone was offering him 117, but if they were, that might have been enough that the Hornets would have lost him, which admittedly wouldn't have been the worst thing, but hey, we were dead set on getting him apparently, so here we are.
Also worth noting, all 4 years, fully guaranteed. There's not a partial guarantee or team option, anything to mitigate that fourth year. That's why it comes into, it's such an important distinction. And of course, in addition to the cap hit that you see, there's also the cap hit from the waive and stretch. You know, effectively adding $9 million to years 2 and 3, how you want to adjust the math on year one with the waive and stretch is kind of up to you. I think we're sitting at about $9 million in cap space after the signing.
Well, oh, really?
Yeah. The way I've been doing it mentally is instead of attributing the full 27 to this deal, I've only been attributing the extra 18 that go into future years. Just because this year, practically speaking, you could justify, and some people are, taking all of the $27 million out of this year. But practically speaking, unless we can do something with that additional $27 million, there's no reason to actually count it. And so it makes more sense to only, like, to not subtract it out of this year, since there's nobody on the market still worth actual money.
Exactly.
And just add the future amounts in. So I like the way I'm doing the accounting is that it's a 4 year 138 deal rather than 4 147, which is if you apply the whole stretch to Hayward, which, you know, either way, it was like even without the stretch, it wasn't a good deal, and the stretch was avoidable, and yet here we are.
Yeah, and that's a good way to transition to just some other alternatives that the Hornets had in making the room, because, you know, you can kind of quibble or disagree over whether jumping the gun on the rebuild, bringing in Hayward, was the right way to do it. You know, we've seen teams have success with building up their roster and then bringing in star players, right? Toronto did it. The Clippers did it, although, you know, that didn't really go too well.
I mean, if we get to where the Clippers are, I'm pretty sure I would be happy.
I would be okay with that as well. But, you know, also our roster not quite as good as the Clippers were or the Rockets were.
But so, like, with Toronto, were you saying the Kawhi trade?
Yeah. Yeah. Which okay, was well, moving yeah, DeRozan, they, but.
And also, so
notably. They actually did a rebuild, like, completed one, kind of.
Well, they didn't have to go through the rebuild quite as bad.
It was a bit, I guess.
But they did build.
The step that we're at right now, is closer to like where the 2014-15 Rockets were, 2014-15 Raptors were. So it's not the step at which they trade for Kawhi. It's we're at the step at which they're acquiring pieces and getting guys together. So this signing is more like Amir Johnson than it is Kawhi Leonard almost.
Oh, jeez.
And the Amir Johnson signing was a good one at the time. Like, it was a very large deal, but it was for a player who generally makes a positive impact. And realistically, he was a big part of establishing the culture there in the long run as DeRozan and Lowry became what they were.
Okay. So just like future implications, like, that's not, we want to leave that later, right?
Well, we have it listed fifth of the five.
Right.
Okay.
Well, the question is alternatives to, because the argument is that we jumped the gun getting Hayward, but whatever, we have Hayward, we're bringing him
the
in.
The argument is kind of real that like we aren't getting, I guess, great value for money with cap space. I mean, like, I'm the thing is, like, I feel like the mid level free agents. So like guys like, you know, last we talked about this a lot with regards to Rozier, but like Tyus Jones and DeLon Wright and Rashawn Holmes, these kind of guys. Like, we don't know if we actually went in for them. We just know we put in some money for Cauley Stein. He declined to go to Golden State. You know, at the time, you know, they looked to be a contender, and then Steph went down, and then, I mean, not a contender, but they looked like they'd still be pretty good. And if you're a basketball player, I kind of get why you'd want to play with Golden State, you know, get a lot of dunks. You know, Kerr gives you a fair bit of freedom. So if we're going to use max contract kind of numbers, I think we're like we can't get like a legitimate all-star for that anyway, because if someone's worth a max, they're going to choose someone else. So like, if we actually use the max, I think he'd be on a similar caliber of player to Hayward at best anyway. So like, you know, but if, I don't know, like this, like the thing is, like, because Kupchak's just so shit, like he doesn't use cap space to absorb bad contracts or anything. Like, you can, in a way, you can just say, you know, it's just delaying the inevitable just avoiding the inevitable disappointment when, you know, Kupchak doesn't use cap space, right? And at least we've actually got a good player for the money. But I don't know. Like, to me, like, basically today was just the death of all optimism about Kupchak, really. Like, he's just never going to do... get it. So, yeah.
Well, and the thing is, if we're thinking about other options in terms of like, I think the assumption here is that we're talking about what happens if we are guaranteed that we're signing Hayward, right? So right. Better options to create the space than what we did.
You've already talked about that.
Well, we talked about a couple, but like, you know, the fact is that practically speaking, I only listed two. I think
there's also the fact that like Kupchak, like, okay, here's another thing. If we don't get an asset back for Rozier in a trade, whenever it happens, like I'm actually just gonna flip it, because I think there's just a real chance that we didn't want to give up a future pick, to dump Batum or Rozier. And that's another thing. That's more the contradiction. It's like, you know, we still want to keep future assets because we're developing, and then, you know, we signed someone who's just, you know, just gonna take us out of bottom three. So
okay, so to start, I am not actually sure that Hayward is good enough on his own to take us out of the bottom like five or six. I think that Hayward is good enough on his own to basically make us exactly as good as we were this year. Because as good as we nominally were this year, a large part of that was just overperforming actual. Like, we played really, really well in the clutch, despite the fact that that's largely randomness, but there's some skill in it. We outperformed our Pythagorean expectation by winning a lot more close games, even though that's largely randomness, although there is some skill in it. And so generally speaking, like, if you assume that we backslide a little bit about that, then practically speaking, the extra games that we win with Hayward probably just put us right back where we were already this season. So, like, I'm not too sure. It's a terrible thing in terms of, like, tanking for 2021 and especially into the future, especially by, 2023. Because, like, 2023 is the big one that you really want to be bad for. Really? And by then, Gordon Hayward is going to probably not be an NBA, like, an average NBA player. So, like, I'm not too concerned about the impact of the tanking, but in terms of, like, things we could have done to create space, like, I could probably list off 20 trades that made more sense than the ones we did. So, you know, Rozier to the Clippers for Beverly and Magruder before Magruder was traded. Makes more sense than what we did. We,
well, then any what do we do with PBev and Magruder?
Do what?
Well, then what do we do with PBev and Magruder? Like,
so there would be a third team presumably lined up to take on those guys because those guys are just better than...
Yeah, but like, so they'd all involve, you know, us giving up like future assets, right?
No, none of them would.
But like, so like, who takes on PBev and Magruder for free? Like,
lots of teams. Beverly's considered a positive asset widely around the league. It's just that Rozier is somehow viewed better.
No, so like, exactly. So why couldn't we just? If we actually pass up the chance to just dump Rozier to get like OKC's trade exception, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Like.
Okay, so the problem
I feel like that surely wasn't an option.
I do think there are only a few teams that are actually dumb enough to take Rozier because most teams do recognize that he's a bad player. But the teams that are dumb enough to take Rozier are likely to treat him as a positive asset. That's the kind of the tricky balance you walk is that you have to actually find which teams are dumb enough to do that.
With the PBF is it going to be a dumb team taking on PBF?
No, a smart team will take on PBEV. So the surplus value in this trade is going to, like, basically it's coming out of the Clippers. Because the Clippers in this case are the dumb team that is taking on Rozier, who is actually worse than Beverly, but they don't know that. And that's kind of how all of these are going to come up, is where it's like, you know, for the equivalent with the Corey Joseph trade, for example. Joseph is a less toxic contract than Rozier. Is a more toxic contract than Rozier just because he can't play at all, or shouldn't play at all, probably will. But the thing is that, you know, because he's smaller, he's easier to maneuver. And so, like, the end result is that there's a lot of teams in there where if you can find someone who will treat Rozier as a positive and will deal a slightly bad contract, even a slightly bad contract to us, because, like, Corey Joseph to us is enough to get us within spitting distance of the required space. And so, like, there's plenty of options like that. James Johnson and Wave and Stretch James Johnson is better than Wave and Stretch than waving and stretching Batum. And so that's the thing. Like, there were so many better options than waving and stretching Batum that the process there just has to be viewed as terrible. But yeah. Do we want to move on to the impact on the rotation?
Yeah, I think let's do that. I think we've covered it pretty well.
Aaron, where was your optimism that you were talking about? Or is that actually just not, you started talking about Kentucky and then you realize it's all not
there. Just sort of evaporated. Yeah,
yeah, fair enough.
I was looking, honestly, like comparing us to the Thunder, and it got really depressing because it's like, why not the Hornets? Why are the Hornets the team that's always going to make these moves, these peripheral moves that look good in the short term, but don't even look good in the short term? They're just asinine moves that don't make any sense. It's what we did with our centers, and we ended up with Biombo when, you know, we could have, all that stuff happened. We're not the smart franchise. We're not the team that's creatively using cap space or flipping assets for other assets. We're just treading water and playing the most old-fashioned game in the history of NBA GMs. And it shouldn't come as a surprise because our GM is apparently the only GM in the NBA who doesn't tamper. So
But the thing is, like, you could 100% run a very strong offseason without ever once tampering. It would not be hard to do better than Mitch did this offseason without tampering once. Basically, the problem here is not that Mitch doesn't do stuff like tampering. The problem here is that Mitch is not thinking strategically at all. Like, there is no indication of any forward-thinking strategy. There's no indication of a plan. There's no indication of an understanding of the tools available to him. Practically speaking, he's just, you know, grabbing the next shiny object. And doesn't really have, like, the ability to actually evaluate the pieces that he's grabbing either, so it just ends up bad. There's just no real way around it, and it's, you know, ultimately what we come back to is sea otters. it's kind of, like, the running theme you have to go with, because practically speaking, there's just no indication of advanced thought.
Yeah, so can we, like, again, like, yeah, just, but this is annoying because, like, all, like, it's,
you just want to roll.
You just want to, yeah, roll into a ditch and fucking, bro, like, because he talks about, like, he's being more strategic with his, you know, press conferences with the media where, you know, he's already trying to hide a lot of his plans. Like, he was talking about, you know, taking on bad contracts and that sort of thing, you know, not rushing it. And then he's just like,
yeah. Yeah, if he had done everything he said in his press conferences, it would have been a great offseason. I mean, then he went and did none of that. But yeah. Okay, so we're 42 minutes in. It's probably time to talk about the rotation.
Yeah, so the thing about, like, so the thing, because I feel like, oh, this kind of ties into the future cap, but I feel like this basically means that this roster plus whatever we get, 21, 22, 23, obviously, this is basically it. Like, we're not going to, like, I mean, that doesn't sound that bad, but, like,
we went from
before
having,
the deal.
So, on account of these moves, we went from an estimated 50, let's see. So, it would have been an estimated $48 million in cap next offseason to an estimated zero. So basically we had a chance.
Is that 48 doesn't include like just dumping an expiring Rozier either, does it? Like,
right. That includes Rozier on the roster still.
Yeah. So
there's certainly there's certainly room to actually gain more space if we needed to. You know, practically speaking, it's a functional zero because we have less than 9 million in space, which means that you're better off just using the MLE, and functioning as an over the cap team. So, you know, by the end of it, it's just like, okay, well, there's not going to be another point where we have free agent openings on this team. The only way that we open up more space than that is if we decide to not extend a Kyoto Monk, which would be dumb, and not beyond the realm of possibility at this point, because we clearly are dumb. Even if we don't extend that QO to Monk, then we still only end up with like $22 million in space, which is not enough for anything meaningful, or even enough for a player better than Monk. By the end of it, it just doesn't, you know, this move, we've kind of skipped forward to it because we're talking about what was supposed to be the fifth thing, which is the impact of future cap space. But basically, this move guarantees that for the remainder of this roster's core, because remember, the bulk of the competent players on this roster, Devontae is 25, so he's already at the point where it is statistically unlikely he improves over the rest of his career. TJ and Miles and Monk and Jalen are all 22, which means that by the time that we next have cap space, which would be the, 2023 offseason,
but like then again, like you also have to like account for like extensions, right?
Extensions to Graham, extension to Monk, or
no, and then Miles
re-signing
PJ, like
Monk, presumably, yeah, extension thinking, to Miles, extension to PJ eventually. That's kind of it. We're just like we're probably never going to have space with this core again. Basically,
at
the point where all of the players involved in it will still be good. And it's on account of a contract that was not a good use of money because, as we've established, it was bad.
About
50% of an overpay.
The 21 offseason, to be fair, like you can genuinely argue, you know, 21 offseason, we wouldn't have used cap space properly either. But if you think about it, like, you know, we had Jalen on his, we're going to have Jalen on his rookie contract for 1.5 million. We're going to have Miles and PJ on their rookie contract still. So like 21, like, I don't know, like it was just such a good opportunity, I guess. I mean, I guess you can argue, you know, we were never going to get a proper free agent anyway, so this one's kind of moot. But even then,
thing is, you never want to give up. There are windows created by the gap in a free agent hold from a team-friendly deal. So like Grams and like Monks. Basically, by the difference in the cap hold and their actual value. And good teams take advantage of those every time.
Yeah, exactly.
And we basically just threw away the ability to take advantage of it entirely. We were to trade Rozier, we would get up to... Actually, there's a thought. If we trade Rozier and take nothing back for future salary, we would get up to $27 million in space, which is actually a mildly relevant amount and doesn't cost us anything meaningful because Rosier is not meaningful. And so by the end of it, like, yeah, like we might be able to do something if we trade Rosier, but then we have to pay the asset price to dump Rosier. And so it's just like, okay, well, why didn't we just, you know, not sign Hayward or sign him to a reasonable number or sign anyone to a reasonable number rather than eating up all of our future flexibility on a player who we're not getting a good deal on? And that's kind of the issue that you run into where it's just like, practically speaking, there were better uses of our cap space and this was not the window we should have been overbidding in.
And then going back to what like Joe said about like doing nothing was a great solution. That's actually like, because seriously, if you look at our rotation, like, and it, like, especially if you're as high on, say, Jalen McDaniels as we are, like, Jalen McDaniels, I mean, by the way, like, but if you're not high on him, you're sleeping with the as Kendrick Perkins says, with the box fan in your face and the thermostat down at like what 50 Fahrenheit or whatever. Anyway, but seriously, Jalen, like, he's you need to invest time into him because guys with his athleticism and defensive IQ don't come around very often. So if you can get something out of him offensively, he's instantly a high-tier starter. He deserves starter minutes. You know, Cody Martin deserves some time because if he does shoot, then he's actually a good player too. Miles deserves development because his biggest issue is stuff that, you know, would kind of, that is, you know, a chance to be ironed out with just simply more playing time. And then PJ, obviously, we need to give him minutes too. And then, so honestly, like if the roster was just, if you took Hayward out completely, I think we'd already be stretched for minutes. Because like even before the Hayward deal, I was already worried about Monk playing nothing. But at least before the Hayward deal, there was a chance that he could play like, I don't know, maybe 8 minutes at shooting guard and like a few at small forward, that sort of thing. Now with Hayward, like, where does Hayward go? Like, because, you know, do we treat him like actually, like, and also Hayward's lost all his burst, as we kind of talked about. So on defense, Hayward might be more of a power forward than a guard right now. So, but then if he plays power forward, then he takes minutes away from Jalen. So it's just like the rotation is looking extremely messy right now.
Right. Cause so
I assume Ball, Rozier, Hayward, and then Graham all play starter minutes, and that would just completely just fuck us, to be honest, and PJ probably too. And then so none of those guys play center.
I did actually PJ, kind like, of go and break it out. If we work from the rotations over those last 14 games, we were giving a combined 70 and a half minutes per game to Cody Martin, Caleb Martin, and Jalen McDaniels. If those guys are cut next season, so 70 and a half minutes is more than enough minutes for Hayward and Ball on its own. So you don't have to worry too much about minutes getting cut from elsewhere. And practically speaking, if all those minutes come from those guys, then that's fine. Ideally, you want those guys only playing about like 15 to 20 minutes a game combined, I would think. Maybe as high as... I don't think Cody Martin should be playing. I'll be straight up with that.
Yeah, no, like I wouldn't have him playing either. I mean, so, you could find, you know, like 10 maybe, but yeah, like I wouldn't have him playing. Like I think Jalen Miles, PJ, that's your forward sorted.
Well, oh, yeah, keep going. Yes and no. Like it's so practically speaking, if Jalen Miles and PJ are playing 30 minutes a game, which is on the high end, that's 60 minutes. Add in, let's say 20 for Jalen because that's about reasonable. That's 80 minutes. You have 96 at the forward positions. And that doesn't account for PJ playing center, which he played three times as often once, like he played center three times as often across that 14 game stretch as he did in the prior 45, on a per game basis. Which should tell you that like the plan here is probably to use PJ at center a lot more often because that's where we found the minutes coming open.
But the thing is, he's PJ has a small ball five, yeah, but I don't think you can rely on it. Like, it's something I would... No, it's a valuable, like, you know, like, tactical weapon, I guess. But I would not go to it for, like, real minutes. Like, it'd be, like, an 8 minutes per game sort of thing.
Right, so it's...
At max.
Over the course of... That's how it's going to match up. Over the end of the season, it was played for about 6 minutes a game. I think it can go as high as 10. But if it goes as high as 10, then, like... I mean, if it goes as high as 10, then you have... So that's 70 minutes between PJ Miles and Jalen at the forward spots, which is 28 minutes for Hayward, which is about what he should be playing with his age. And so then you just have to split the guard minutes between Terry, Devontae, and Rozier. Terry, Devontae, Monk, and Ball, counting through them. And practically speaking, assuming you take a slight cut to Terry's minutes, which you should because he was playing 35 during that stretch, and you take a slight cut to Devontae's minutes, which you should because he was also playing 35 during that stretch, you can even take away, like, so you can also take three from Monk because Monk was actually playing 29 minutes per game during that stretch. So by the end of it, you can kind of cobble together enough minutes for LaMelo. You'll note that I only got to 13 minutes there, but you can also add like a few minutes in at the forward because, you know, it's just kind of actually fishing out the minutes, but I think you can eventually find enough minutes for everyone involved, basically.
If our coach was like Taylor Jenkins, who's actually done that, like, you know, he kept basically everyone who wasn't Morant at like 28, and then
my expectation, 24, and then my expectation is that while Borrego will not handle this correctly, the way that he handles it incorrectly will be that he plays Cody Martin over Jalen. Which is not
good. I say that too.
It's not good. And it should be Jalen over Cody. Jalen is clearly a better player.
I don't see him finding minutes for everyone. Like, there's no way. Like, how do you keep Terry's trade value? Like, no, like,
I don't think he's too worried about Terry's trade value, honestly.
I think he is.
Like,
how could you otherwise justify 35 to him last season?
I mean, bad decision making is the short version of it.
Like, I'm pretty, like, seriously, when Rozier doesn't play, I think you can kind of tell, like, that's, I don't know, I just think you can tell Borrego actually starts getting to his bag. Like, for example, that last game of the season, Rozier didn't play, and then he needed to go on a run, he just went to I think it was five wings on the court, that sort of thing. Borrego is, like, actually, he's open to, like, that's one of his strengths, right? His creativity, not creativity, but the fact that he tries everything. No, but, like, I think, like, naturally he is kind of a more, like, expansive sort of coach. But, like, obviously you can't, like, switch 1-5 with Terry in there because he's not switchable at all. But, I still think, like...
He's switchable in certain circumstances.
He's
undersized, but he is, like, strong enough to where if you simplify his obligations, he doesn't get run over.
He does get run over because his core strength is... honestly shocking for him. Like, I thought it was... No, like, he can... I don't know. Like, yeah, so he has some nice box outs on fives before we do the scram switch, that sort of thing, but, like, I haven't seen much from him.
He's also denied some backdowns fairly well. Overall, like, he's also denied some backdowns fairly well. Like, players get the ball with their back to him and try and just overpower him. Yeah, so, like, I think overall you're not too worried about Terry from a strength standpoint because that's one of his few strengths defensively, realistically. Rozier shouldn't. Realistically speaking, I guess I'm just saying I don't see what you're exactly thinking the handling of Rozier would be because, like, Rozier is playing 35 minutes a game. It would be okay. I don't think the question here is whether or not Terry is good or bad because Terry is clearly bad. But in terms of, like, reasonably expecting his minute total to come down into that 28 to 30 range, maybe it stays up at 31 or 32. But even with that,
I can see 28, yeah, for sure. But, like, 28's a point where I think he can keep his trade value, decently up. But, like, no, that's the thing. Like, because, no, like, when I say starting minutes, also, like, why would PJ only play, like, I don't know, man. Like,
but I mean, hang on. I had PJ at 30 a game. PJ at 30 a game is actually a pretty solid amount for any player. And that is one of the things where it's just like figuring out how they assemble the rotation. Because I suspect that at the very beginning of things, this rotation probably will not include even like the whichever of Cody Martin or Jalen McDaniels is chosen.
I don't think it'll include Monk either.
No, I think it. I don't think there's any doubt about it, including Monk at this point. They're pushing him in press conferences. Minutes?
Like 15.
Do it? No, max. I'm thinking he's probably going to be in the 25 a game range.
Like how? Like no, because like that just doesn't fucking compute. Then like
we have effectively So, assuming
I think you've already gone through this. So, like, maybe like we can talk about this after, maybe, like, because right, I think the audience probably already knows. Okay, so
yeah. Well, so basically, what we assume is 25 minutes a game of Zeller, 18 minutes a game of Biz. Not 18. Oh. 13. It is 13 a game of Biz.
Yeah,
10, 10 a game of PJ at the 5 gets us to 48 at the center. Forwards goes presumably 30 of Miles, 30 of Hayward, 20 of
PJ,
plus or minus about 3 to 4 for ultra small lineups, probably featuring technically LaMelo at the 3. So that gets us to 96 at the forwards, and then I had 30, 80. 20, 30. So that leaves an extra 16 minutes.
So that's the Cody Martin, Jalen, right?
Yeah. So that was originally the Cody Martin, Jalen minutes. But practically speaking, I suspect that they will go to like some distribution of like LaMelo at the 3. That kind of thing. Yep. So let's, for now, and also Monk at the 3, which is probably the other possibility. Let's just attribute that to 16 to, let's attribute those 16 to LaMelo for now entirely, even though it'll probably be some combination of LaMelo and Monk. Yeah. So then we've got 96 minutes to split across the guards, 30 for Terry, 30 for Devontae, leaves 36 remaining.
Melo's going to play 14.
Do what?
Melo's going to play a start of minutes, isn't he? Like 30
right,
minutes.
Right, yeah. So let's throw an additional 14 at LaMelo. So that leaves 22. Yeah, so that leaves 22 for Monk.
Okay, so that's...
But also, like, I suspect that LaMelo is probably bad as a rookie because LaMelo is going to be bad as a rookie.
No, he is going to be bad as a rookie.
And so I suspect that LaMelo probably gets closer to, like, 24, 25 than he does to, like, 30.
Okay.
And so if you do that, then Monk ends up at 28, and that's just fine.
Okay. So if Borrego, you know, can get it right, yeah, okay.
That's exactly it. Like, you can set the rotations for this team up in a way that actually makes sense. It probably pushes out Cody. It probably pushes out Jalen. You know, again, not too torn up about Cody. Think pushing out Jalen's a terrible idea, but there are worse terrible ideas involved in this roster. You could actually get away with playing Jalen at the 5 for the 13 minutes and against some teams, but just because you do have those 13 minutes of backup 5 where it's Biz. You don't want to play Biz. Because practically speaking, like, you know, the fact that we still have Biz in our rotation is dumb.
Yeah.
And so, like, there is a way to create minutes for all of these guys. Some guys will probably take cuts that they shouldn't. The fact that we don't have a solid place to, like, a solid person to eat up center minutes is an issue. But overall, like, I don't think anyone is going to just be completely put out of the rotation because we've got such an imbalanced roster, which we do have an imbalanced roster. Like, practically speaking, a Rozier for Randall trade and playing Randall at the 5 would go a long way towards rebalancing this roster. But, you know, that's still out there, and it would require the team being smarter than it has shown to be. So, yeah, that's the Hayward stuff.
Good deal. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It's been another episode of Beyond the Hive. You can give us a subscribe, a nice review. We'll see you next time when we discuss the upcoming, the fast approaching 2020-2021 season for the Charlotte Hornets. And we talk about how Nick Richards should be the backup center. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.